Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. There are two issues before this Court on appeal, both concerning Frank's evidentiary hearings, one procedural and one substantive. The first is whether the unprecedented pre-Frank's hearing procedure the District Court used was improper when it allowed the government to introduce new evidence, but then denied the appellant an opportunity to cross on that same evidence.
Now, I'm a little confused when you say unprecedented, because it seems to me, in the normal course of things, if somebody wants a Frank's hearing, then the district court is going to say, effectively, why? And so people will say, because, you know, here are my reasons for thinking that there's a problem in the supporting affidavits or the like. And there's, if you will, kind of an informal inquiry before the court decides to go full bore into a Frank's hearing. And I'm not sure that anything more than that happened here.
Your Honor, there were actually two procedural problems with what the district court did here. And you're absolutely right that the court must consider what the defendant's challenge to the underlying affidavit is. Mm-hmm. And in Franks, the court specifically noted that those allegations can't simply be conclusory. There has to be some meat on the bones. It has to point to specific statements in the affidavit that it believes are inaccurate.
And maybe why? I mean, I guess it's sort of a threshold. It's a pre-Franks hearing, if you will.
Well, Your Honor, for his offer of proof, the appellant attached to his request for a Franks hearing an affidavit from an officer that contained statements that directly contradicted statements that were made in the challenged affidavit. That the appellant's motion also illustrated that there was material information omitted from the challenged affidavit.
So what's your best example of a direct contradiction? These look to me a little bit more like, you know, maybe there were a couple of houses. The houses seem to look rather similar. Could have just been a mistake in the number of the house on West Aiken. So what do you see as a direct contradiction?
Comparing the two affidavits that were attached to the appellant's request for a Franks hearing on their face, there are the most egregious contradiction are the statements of the officers. We have two different Peoria officers, both alleging that they've conducted investigations regarding the alleged drug dealing activity of the appellant, but both pointing to two separate houses and both saying that they're relying upon their own independent investigations.
I thought each was also saying, my information is corroborated by the other officer.
Precisely, Your Honor. And so that is the statement to which the appellant pointed the district court to in his motion requesting a Franks hearing. And opposing the appellant's request for a Franks hearing, the government submitted a motion that contained new evidence that went directly to the finding of probable cause. And in considering the appellant's motion, the district court here went one step further and allowed the government to call the officer that authored the challenged affidavit to testify regarding that new evidence. Again, this was procedurally improper for two reasons. The first is that the district court should not have permitted the government to introduce new evidence that directly addressed probable cause. And this court's decision in Harris is particularly informative on this point. There, this court held that allowing the government to bolster an affidavit and a district court's probable cause finding with a post hoc filing does not satisfy the Fourth Amendment concerns addressed in Franks, because to do so would deny the defendant an opportunity to cross-examine. And that's precisely what happened here.
So that would, of course, be wrong, you know, if you're bolstering. If you're actually just trying to figure out, you know, why did the officer write down what he wrote down, that would be different. And on your other point, I thought McMurtry was permitted to cross-examine Officer Barish.
Your Honor, I'll address that in kind of two parts. The first being that whether or not the evidence went to probable cause versus addressing the defendant's concerns. Here, the government's motion and the testimony of Officer Barish at the hearing did not simply address why Officer Barish completely failed to make any reference to the earlier warrant in his affidavit. Instead, The government introduced evidence regarding a whole host of additional investigative measures that it took the same day, but then wholly failed to mention in the affidavit that was submitted to the court that issued the second warrant. This calls into question the accuracy of the information that was contained within the actual challenged affidavit.
There's no obligation for the police to tell the court everything they know, including false starts in investigations and so on. And I can see how that explanation can be made here. Let me put this way. What did the defense want to ask Officer Barish that the defense was not allowed to do here?
Well, Your Honor, there are a couple problems with the fact that Officer Barish was allowed to testify. Again, he introduced a whole host of additional information that the issuing judge was not allowed to consider in ruling on whether or not the affidavit established probable cause. And although going back to Judge Wood's question, the defendant was allowed to do some cross-examination of the officer once he took the stand. This precise issue was addressed by the court by a court in Cates v. State, which is one of the cases cited in our opening brief. And there the court held that once the court began this sort of hybrid procedure where the government was allowed to introduce new evidence, it was improper for the court to preclude the defendant.
I understand your position. Let me go back to my question. What did the defense want to ask Barish that it was not allowed to? One can look at this from the other end of the telescope and say, you got a Franks hearing, unless there was something important that was not allowed.
Well, it's, Your Honor, it's hard to speculate as to what would have been the outcome of a full cross-examination. However, there are a lot of unanswered questions here based upon the comparison of the two affidavits that were submitted to the district court.
Could you be more specific?
Certainly, Your Honor. Whether or not the information regarding the confidential informant was actually true. The officer, Officer Barish, who authored the challenged affidavit, chose to rely upon vague and ambiguous statements instead of relying on the alleged same-day investigation that it did, including a controlled buy at the appellant's house.
So the defense theory is that Barish made up the CI and the controlled buy.
Without the ability to fully cross-examine, Your Honor, the appellant was not given the right to explore the inconsistencies, and particularly the statement that we referred to earlier, which is two officers making diametrically opposed statements regarding where the alleged drug dealing activity was taking place and what their confidential informants had told them, which led them to their investigation.
But, you know, going to the actual hearing, in the appendix to your brief on page 2, the government objects on the scope of the cross-examination on a ground that seems fairly reasonable. He says, counsel identified the first paragraph on page 2 as what she thought the false statement was. And cross-examination on that is fine. And then he's objecting that she's going beyond that. He says, to go through every paragraph, I think, is more the nature of a Franks hearing than it is the preliminary hearing to see whether or not she's met the burden. So it's like things that hadn't been challenged are now being gone into. Now, if she'd challenged more, perhaps the court would have allowed more examination into that.
Your Honor, at that point, Officer Barish had been given the opportunity to introduce, and like I said, a litany of additional investigative measures that it allegedly took the same day as the warrant was applied for and executed. And so at that point, to the judge's earlier point regarding looking at it from the other side of the spectrum and saying that this was a Franks hearing, well, in this instance, it was a Franks hearing only for the benefit of the government, and the defendant was not given the opportunity to cross-examine regarding this new evidence that was introduced by the government that substantiated the probable cause finding. And the
district judge here didn't rely on the testimony for a probable cause, did he?
Your Honor, I would argue that he absolutely did rely upon the new evidence. And
he doesn't seem to indicate that by his remarks, Ms. Waddell.
Your Honor, if I could point you to the court's remarks, he specifically says, under these facts, the officer acted in a responsible manner by double-checking the information before proceeding. There's no way for the for the court to have known that the officer double-checked the information without the government having been able to introduce evidence outside of the four corners, which is in direct violation of the procedure established in Franks and reiterated by this court in Harris. I see that I'm entering my rebuttal time. I'd like to reserve the rest.
Mr. Shuler?
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Kirk Shuler, and I'm representing the government in this appeal.
So why not just have a Franks hearing? I mean, you know, the government sticks its big toe in the water, and it would have been so much more straightforward rather than have this truncated procedure. And, you know, on Appendix page 5 is the material that Ms. Vidal just mentioned, the double-checking. What's the government going to the mats against a Franks hearing for here?
Well, Judge Wood, actually, Judge Hamilton raised a point that I want to piggyback off of in answering your question, and that is that the defendant already had a Franks hearing.
But apparently not, though.
Yeah, I mean, the government stepped in and cut off the and convinced the judge to cut off the questioning.
Yes, and there was a cutoff in the cross-examination of one question and one question regarding surveillance. But you have to look at the entire cross-examination in the context of what the defendant was trying to prove. The defendant was trying to prove a specific false statement and material omissions.
But listen to that, material omissions. And so as all this new information about quite a bit of additional investigation is coming out, first of all, it's very hard as a practical matter for the district court to blot all of that out of his mind as he's evaluating probable cause. Secondly, you know, how can counsel be expected to know in advance of hearing all of this what she wants to cross-examine about?
Well, one of the facts that's in this record, in the transcript of the hearing, is that the government actually provided both of these officers, Officer Barish and Officer Lane, to defense counsel to allow them an opportunity to interview both officers. So in the transcripts itself, there is an indication of fact that the defendant had the opportunity to interview both of these agents, both of these officers, prior to this hearing.
That's off the record.
No, that's in the record,
Your Honor. The interviews would have been off the record.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Yes, the interviews are off the record.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that's an important point in evaluating what this hearing is, because no matter what we call the hearing had the important hallmarks of a Franks hearing, because the defendant was able to cross-examine the affiant, Officer Barish, and the defendant had the opportunity to present additional evidence as well.
That sounds like you want us to affirm on a basis that the district judge completely rejected. Right? The district judge sustained the objection, said, yeah, if I think you've made a sufficient showing, we'll go ahead and allow full cross-examination, presentation of additional evidence. But having heard what the officer testified, I find that they did the responsible thing in dealing with this confusion that had arisen, and so there's no sufficient showing here. It's very odd.
Your Honor, I agree. It is very odd. We could have saved a whole lot more time just continuing with the hearing there. But the question here is, was it an abuse of discretion for the judge to limit the cross-examination, and was there clear error?
Well, let's look at it this way. How can you reconcile this procedure with what we said in Harris?
Well, in Harris, Your Honor, there was a Franks hearing. The district court was based its decision on probable cause, saying that, yes, the defendants made a substantial preliminary showing of a false statement.
I'm not talking about whether there was a Franks hearing eventually. I'm talking about whether the government can prevent a Franks hearing by coming in with additional evidence to bolster the and to rebut the showing.
Yeah. And, Your Honor, I would submit that the evidence presented in this case was not bolstering the probable cause. It was bolstering in what Judge Wood referred to as the question of, okay, why are you entitled to this hearing? You have to provide context to the false statements or the alleged material omissions.
But they went well beyond what was in the affidavits. That's the problem. And in Harris, evidence not made available to the issuer of the warrant, whoever it is, the state judge, the magistrate judge, can't be relied on for determining probable cause. Seems like the district judge does that.
Well, certainly that evidence was relevant to probable cause and was relevant to the facts
but
of this.
But it wasn't before the issuing authority.
Correct, Your Honor. It wasn't in the four corners of the affidavit, but there's no indication, I believe, in this record that the district court judge relied on that information to determine whether there was probable cause. The district court judge relied on that information to determine whether the Lane affidavit was false on the one hand or whether the Officer Barish's affidavit was false on the other. And at the end of this hearing, there was no question. The confidential informant in Officer Lane's affidavit had made the mistake. And the Officer Lane's affidavit was false. But Officer Barish's affidavit, there's nothing that's false in there.
But Lane also said in his affidavit that Barish had corroborated cocaine dealing or drug dealing out of the 1514 house, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that had to be false, right?
That is correct. And that's regarding the warrant that's not involved in this appeal. The warrant that the search was based on is Officer Barish's warrant. The question of whether there was any Frank's relief should be granted in this case would be relevant towards whether Officer Lane's affidavit was being challenged. But Officer Lane's affidavit...
If you were sitting where Judge Wilson was sitting, wouldn't you have wanted to know that these officers had and their informants and controlled buyers had gotten this all mixed up?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that was
so
a mistake.
So would I.
Yeah. I think that was a mistake not to include it in the affidavit. I think it was, and that's why the hearing was so important, because this information came out.
That's why there just should have been a Franks hearing, you know, instead of this oddly truncated thing.
Yeah, and Your Honor, I regret to refer to it as a pre-Franks hearing in my brief. I think the argument I want to make here is that whatever we call it, it had the hallmarks of a Franks hearing,
well,
and it was a Franks hearing.
When you say that, you're contradicting the position the government took in the district court and that you convinced the district court to take, right?
That's what they describe it as, Your Honor. But what's not important is the
district court concludes, I've decided I don't need a Franks hearing. I mean, you know, the district court doesn't conclude, well, I guess we've just actually done a Franks hearing.
Your Honor, it's not important what the people or the parties or the court call what happened. What's important is what happened.
And what happened was the ability of the defendant to probe the omissions as well as the statements was truncated.
Your Honor, it was truncated with regard to one question about surveillance. And this court's decision in Taylor says that even in a Franks hearing, a district court has the ability to limit cross-examination to relevant lines of inquiry.
But that's not what the district judge did. The district judge said, we're not doing a Franks hearing. I mean, you're making up rationales after the fact to support what might have been done, but that's not what happened.
Well, Your Honor, I think if this court wants to take a look at it as a pre-Franks hearing, as my brief described, I think there is the case law in the Seventh Circuit that describes the procedure and allows that procedure to happen.
You're talking about Spears. Right.
Spears is a case, in, yes, Your Honor.
And Spears—that's the one you're relying on to say that that the government can present evidence at a pre-Franks hearing. But we didn't approve of that procedure because in Spears, the court went on to actually hold a real Franks hearing.
Correct, Your Honor. And even in Harris, the principal case cited by the opposing counsel, even in Harris, the district court ordered the government to submit a supplemental affidavit addressing the question because...
And we said that was a mistake.
No, Your Honor. The mistake was receiving the evidence relevant to probable cause. This goes back to Judge Wood's question about the district court has to know something. There has to be some sort of information received, and only after receiving that information can the district court determine whether there was a false statement or a material omission.
Well, wait. We're confusing two different things. The original showing, the defendant's motion, and then the conclusions after a real evidentiary Franks hearing as to whether there was a knowing or reckless false statement or omission that was material. And it seems to me that what's happened here is that a kind of informal, a reasonable informal procedure that the district judges can do to say, I want to give the defense an opportunity basically to explain itself, has now been transformed into this sort of strange hybrid where the government, you're saying, is entitled to present evidence that the defendant is not allowed to respond to or cross-examine. And that, I don't think we've ever done that.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the defendant was able to cross-examine, and he was able to present additional...
He was cut off.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
He was cut off.
Well, in addition to that, though, Your Honor, the record is clear that the defendant had the opportunity to cross-examine Officer Lane, the other affiant to the false affidavit. The transcript hearing says that both officers are in the courtroom and that the district court specifically allowed the opportunity to the defendant's counsel to question that other officer or the officers if they wanted to. At the end of the hearing, at the end of the cross-examination of Officer Barish, the defendant declined to do so. Your Honor, that's the argument I'd like to make. If there's any other further questions, I'll address them. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Fidel?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points of clarification on rebuttal. To start, counsel for the government says that the district court gave the appellant an opportunity to cross-examine both officers at the hearing, and that's simply not true. If you look at the transcript, I believe it's on page 21 of the hearing where the motion to suppress was considered, the district court sort of mentioned in passing the fact that if the appellant wished to cross-examine, it may entertain that. But it was in the context of a question, and it was quickly moved on. And so I would also...
What difference what context it's in if the district judge says you have the opportunity?
Well, Your Honor, what I would suggest is that there was no reason for defense counsel at that stage to anticipate that it was going to have to put forth its entire Franks evidentiary hearing at that point.
What do we have here besides an inconsistency that would suggest that the Franks hearing is necessary? Or is your position any time a search warrant for room 703 says 705 that a Franks hearing is justified?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't suggest the latter part of what you asked.
What I've just given you is a hypothetical, which I think we've had cases where in a large building the apartment across the hall versus the one that was where they wanted to search was listed. What indicia here of law enforcement conspiracy malfunctioning or intentional malfunctioning of the system would lead us to believe that a full-blown Franks hearing is essential to unearth something?
Your Honor, when a defendant requests a Franks hearing on the basis of omissions, which was part of the appellant's challenge to the affidavit here, the analysis that the district court must undertake is to consider whether probable cause would still exist if the material information shown to have been excluded was incorporated into that challenged affidavit. And here, if the court would have done that analysis, it calls into question not simply the statements made by the officers, which causes serious question as to the entire accuracy of the investigation, but also calls into question the statements of the confidential informants. The appellant simply was not given the opportunity.
Well, suppose the confidential informant was mistaken or gave the wrong address.
Your Honor, the situation here is more unique because we have a situation where the John Doe, who was the confidential informant underlying the Lane affidavit, said in his affidavit before the first warrant was issued that he was driven past the house a second time to confirm the accuracy of the address. Then Officer Barish testified that both confidential informants were driven past the houses to confirm the address. There are just some serious questions here that we need to consider regarding the accuracy, and the procedure proposed by the government would eviscerate the protections of Franks and ignore the well-settled positions that this court articulated in Harris.
Now, do we have any indication on the drive-bys whether these addresses were visible or not? Does that record reflect that?
Your Honor, in the affidavits underlying the search warrants themselves, the officers indicate that the addresses were clearly stated on the houses and affixed to the sides of the house. Correct.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks to all counsel and Ms. Vidal and Ms. Poor. I want to thank you and your firm for accepting the appointment in this case and ably representing the defendant. Thank you very much. Case is taken under advisement.